Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want to live, not the way somebody else wants you to live it, but on your own terms, and strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple, not extreme, and practical survivalism is what this show is all about. You're not going to hear a lot of conspiracy theories or tinfoil hat type of theories. We just keep things survival, we keep things simple to help you live a better life, and that's the primary goal. You're listening to episode number 35, and it's Wednesday, November 4th, 2009. If you're a first-time listener to this show, I want to take a moment to welcome you, thank you, and let you know you have tuned in to a voice of reason in a chaotic world. And this show, episode 35, got a couple of interesting topics for you. I'm going to cover a little bit more about where I left off in the last show about philosophy and the philosophy and the makeup of good, successful survivalists. And a few things that my mentor taught me when I was young, there's a few more little tidbits of philosophy that I want to share with you. And then we're going to dive right into modern technology, specifically cell phones and computers. Things are that are not very often talked about in the survival community. But however, I think they make great survival tools, and I'm going to explain to you why, and there's a good article that I'm going to base that part of the discussion off of. So those are the two main topics. Couple of announcements that I want to make. If you have not joined our forum, it's growing every day. Consider going to todaysurvival.com/forum. Become a member of that. When like-minded people get together and discuss ideas, great things happen. I'm very proud of it. If you haven't become a member of that, go for it. Also, let's talk about the Survival Activist Club, the Today's Survival Show, SAC Club. Already have two forum members that have taken advantage of that. Their usernames are Tough Times and Pigpen. Each one of them have written government officials. One of them wrote somebody in a foreign government and asked me if that was okay, and I told Pigpen, yes, that counts. We can have an influence a lot in what happens in other countries as well, and especially because the United States is so blessed to have been so prosperous. A lot of what we say and what we do has an effect on other countries. So yes, that counts. So each one of them have sent a letter off or sent off something to a government official, and they have received a response, and that counts. So the score for Survival Activist Club is Tough Times 1, Pigpen 1. Don't forget, on December 20th, I'm going to give away an iPod Nano, and also we have another forum member that should let me know something by the end of the week. We may have another prize to add to that. So if you want to know what this is all about, go to the forum and check out the SAC Club. The other announcement I want to make, I want to encourage you to just give me 45 minutes a week. That's about how long these shows take, and I wanted to let you know I'm going to turn this into a weekly show. One of the reasons why I'm going to turn this into a weekly show instead of doing about every 2 or 3 days like I've been doing is I actually do two podcasts. I do Today's Survival Show, and then I also do the Handgun World Show, where I talk only about firearms. Firearms is a hobby of mine that I love to share information about, but It's not the only part of survivalism, obviously, and too many people make the mistake of buying lots of guns and lots of ammo and neglecting other parts of their life. So today's survival show is going to be about bettering our lives, the Handgun World Show. If you want to talk guns, see me over there at handgunworld.com. I'll be posting one show each every week from now on, and there might be special occasions where I might put up a second show during the week, but I think it's going to work out the best for me and also work out the best for my listeners in order to keep up with this show. Also, the last announcement that I'd like to talk about, and then I'll bring the announcements here to a close, is don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you are using iTunes, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can find us at Today's Survival Show by searching that on iTunes, or you can just go to the main page, todayssurvival.com, and click the subscribe button. It's a real easy way to be able to keep up with the podcast and not have to actually go to the main website each time. I would encourage you to do that. And with those being said, let's dive into it. A few more tidbits of philosophy I told you I promised that I'd share with you. My mentor, when I was between 25 and 30, shared a lot of information with me. And if you're taking notes, you might want to jot some of these down, because again, this is going to be a continuation of the last episode. One of the things that he taught me was that it's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future, and that had a huge impact on me. A little bit of money and a whole lot of courage is all you need. I had no money. I was broke, I told you. And I don't care how you budget. As broke as I was, it's not going to go very far. And he said, what matters, Bob, is someone's ingenuity. And I meet people all the time that say to me, hey, I don't have the money to get prepared, Bob. I don't have the budget. Every time I hear that, it makes me think, good, good. You're the kind of person I've been looking for. If you don't have the money, you're the kind of person I want to talk to. I did a whole show on how to prepare on a tight budget. And if you're interested in that, go back and listen to that. I think it was episode 4, but I'll put that in the show notes. And you can go to the posting and look in the notes, and I'll put a link to that show. Even if you only have a dollar, I can show you how to get started just with a dollar. And there's a lot of free things that you can do. There's a lot of free training that you can get. It's free to read our forum. It's free to listen to these podcasts. It's free to go to other people's blogs and start learning. So even if you don't have any money, it's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills. The other thing, the other little tidbit of philosophy my mentor taught me, tip like a rich man or tip like a rich woman. What he meant by that is he gave me some words to live by. He said, Bob, fake it until you make it. Isn't that true? Fake it till you make it. And you know, he and I were talking about how to become wealthy, and he says, tip like a rich man. Give tips like you are a rich man. It kind of puts you in that state of mind of, hey, I'm going to make it. All right? When I go to a restaurant and I buy some food, I'm going to tip like I'm wealthy, even if I'm not. I'm going to fake it until you make it. No one has to know, but it puts you in that state of mind. It puts you in that frame of mind. And what goes around comes around, I promise you. He also said, Bob, learn to work with the people who deserve it, not the people who need it. This was tough for me to understand. And for those of you who are trying to convince other people to get involved in survivalism, let me remind you, learn to work with the people who deserve it, not the people who need it. And here's what he meant by that. He said, life doesn't say that if you need, you'll get a harvest. It says if you plant, you'll get a harvest. If you plant, you will reap. So learn to work with the people who are willing to plant. Teach them to take a small step and plant a seed and show them here's the benefit of what happens when you do that. Here's how you get greater peace of mind. He also taught me learn to work with groups of people rather than just learning to work with individuals. And that's one of the reasons I decided to start this podcast and do the forum, is to learn to work with groups of people. You can influence a lot of more people that way. You can learn to, you can help 1,000 people, folks, but you can't carry 3 of them on your back. So learn to help groups of people. And basically, you know, you've all heard the saying, get off of my back. What my mentor taught me is, you know where that came from? It came from this philosophy right here. I don't care if you're 6'4", 300 pounds, you might be able to carry 1 or 2 people, but not 3, not 4. You can help thousands. So learn to help people, spread survivalism by appealing to the masses. appealing to as many people as you can is important, even if it's just a group of two. My mentor also taught me, if you're jotting this down, write this down. Don't expect a pear tree to bear apples. Think about that one. You can't change people, but you can help them work within their limitations. But a pear tree is a pear tree. It's not going to bear apples. I don't care if you hang apples on a pear tree. When springtime comes around, what does it start producing? Pears. Just work within people's limitations. You can't change them. He also taught me, Bob, the greatest value in life is not a bank account. It's not a car. It's not a home. The greatest value in life, living well. You got to figure out how to live well. And here's my short list that I want to share with you on living well. Basically, there's eight little tidbits of information that I want to share with you, and then we'll move on to the technology segment. First of all, living well, productivity. Production cures all. I've always lived by the philosophy, I must do the most productive thing possible at every given moment. And you know, productivity doesn't necessarily mean, you know, working. Okay, taking a nap, folks, can be productive. So remember that. The second item on my short list of living well, good friends. Establish good friends. Good friends are a great support system. Good friends are the people who know all about you and still like you. Okay? Don't forget about good friends. Also, on my short list, spirituality. Again, it's a personal decision, but I think it's something that everybody needs to have, some type of spirituality in their life. The fourth little tidbit on the short list of living well, have a plan. Have a direction. As I mentioned, if you don't have a plan, if you don't know where you're going, you're going to end up somewhere else. Number five. On the short list, my mentor taught me of living well, don't miss anything. You know, Elton John sang a song. He said, she lived her life like a candle in the wind. Remember that song? Never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. Isn't that sad? Don't miss things. Even the little things. There's big things and little things. Take it all in. And then when he shared this with me, I didn't realize what he was talking about until later on in life. And I want to share a personal story with you. My wife's grandfather lived to be 98. And I only knew the guy for the last 6 years of his life. I didn't meet him till he was 92. Okay, but we went to his house for his 95th birthday one day in Oklahoma. I'll never forget this. She called him Pops, and we went to Pops' house for his 95th birthday. And I was there with my young son. I think my son was 2 years old at that time, and my wife and I were there. And my son's running all over his house, and you know, this guy used to mow his own yard, and he used to go out and pick pecans. He had his own garden. Even at 90, I think he gardened until he was about 97 or so. And we're in his house one day, and all of a sudden, my son's running around his house, terrorizing the place, and he's just sitting there, and he's just watching. And I didn't know what was going through his mind. So I asked him, Pops, I'm sorry about my son running around and terrorizing your house and everything. What are you thinking? And his response was, a smile came to his face, and he says, I'm just taking it all in and watching the show. Taking it all in, watching the show. He didn't want to miss anything about his little 2-year-old great-grandson running around. It didn't matter what was happening. He didn't want to miss it. Remember that. The other little tidbit my mentor taught me. If you live well, you will earn well. And I equate that to survival. If you live well, you'll survive well. Don't miss the nourishment of all the things around you that can help you live a fulfilling life. Also, the other little tidbit he taught me is take care of your inner circle, the people who are important to you. Their nourishment is critical to your survival. One person caring for another. When one person cares for another, that's the greatest of virtues, right? Love. It's the greatest of all virtues, and it's better to live in a tent on the beach than be in a mansion all alone. And the last little tidbit, number eight, my mentor taught me, he says, Bob, you have a chance every day to participate in the miracle process of changing people's lives. And I want to leave you in end this philosophy segment by having you think about that. You have a chance every day to participate in the miracle process of helping change people's lives. Even if it's just getting on our forum and making a post, you never know how what you say and what you do, even posting on an internet forum, how it's going to land on somebody and change their life. So, that pretty much concludes what I wanted to share about survival philosophy. I hope you had a chance to gain something from that. Let's shift gears a little bit and move on to the next subject. There's a another survivalist who he goes by the name of Furfall, F-E-R-F-A-L. And his actual name, I believe, is Fernando Aguirre. I think my Spanish is terrible, folks. He's from Argentina, and he's on a couple of other survival forums. He's also got an excellent blog, which I'll put a link in the show notes. He's also written a phenomenal book called Surviving the Economic Collapse. When I get done reading Shoestring Survivalism by Andy James, I'm going to buy Furfall's book, Surviving the Economic Collapse. And he talks about the economic collapse that he went through in Argentina. There's some great lessons to be learned by this article. I'm going to talk about it in some upcoming shows, but I want you to read the article. Well, what I want to share with you in this next subject was what he said at the end of the article that he wrote, the post that he wrote on another forum. And again, there'll be a link in the show notes. You'll be able to read it. What he said at the end really jumps out at me and really speaks to me. I want to see if this speaks to you. He had just got done talking about tons and tons of very practical survival information. But what I thought was interesting is that he puts he shines a positive light on everything at the end of his article. And I think survivalists sometimes, we sometimes make a mistake. We get too negative. We focus too much on the negatives. We focus too much on the big bad things that could happen and not enough on the good things. And I'll paraphrase a lot of what Furfall says. But he closes his phenomenal article by saying, I want to give you a message of hope and remind you that survival is about surviving, but not for the mere fact of living, he says, but to live happy and rich lives. He said, prepare because it's the smart thing to do and not because you're looking forward to a stink hit the fan situation and other disasters. This is what I love. He says, don't make the mistake of thinking that if the stink hits the fan, you're going to have a new start in life and that all your problems are just going to go away and you'll be able to start in a brave new world. He says, it doesn't work that way. It's quite the contrary. If the stink hits the fan, everything's going to get worse. Small problems are going to turn into bigger problems, more serious problems. If you already have drinking problems, you'll drink more. If you can't keep a job, you'll spend more years unemployed. He said, if you have a disease, you'll see that it'll be harder to get attention and medication. Everything is going to get worse. He says, you know, in a disaster, in a stink hit the fan situation, you're going to have good, honest people starving and corrupt people making a profit. He says, you won't have a cop to protect you, but they're going to come after you when some criminal presses false charges against you. The way it works, he said, that's just the way it works. He says, so anybody that's looking forward to the end of the world as we know it, for a fresh start, better think twice. Get your life straightened out now. And this is very similar to what I've been talking about in almost all of my shows. You know, getting your life straightened out now. What you do now matters. And he says, you know, survivalists are often considered dark fatalists. Isn't that a great way to put it? So many of us are considered dark fatalists, doomsday worshippers. He said, this is not so. The real survivalist shouldn't be like this. Negative people are going to have a lot harder time dealing with a crisis than the positive people will have. A good-natured person is what it takes to make it through a crisis. Know that there's dangers and know that there's situations you can't predict and prepare for them the best that you can. Never forget to live life at its fullest. Furfall said, you and I, we don't know how long we're going to have on this earth. Isn't that true? So make the best of it each passing minute. A survivalist should not be a pessimist. All right? A survivalist should be positive, happy, and enjoying life more than anybody else on the planet. A survivalist understands that each minute of peace that we have is precious and unique. Boy, isn't that true? He wrote this back, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. But isn't that true today? A survivalist doesn't take things for granted. A survivalist is a vital, fit, ever-curious, good-humored person as well. Folks, take time to develop your sense of humor. That's why I recorded that show, You Might Be a Survivalist. All right, if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. We got to sometimes laugh, folks. A survivalist is also fit. A survivalist takes care of their body, and their body takes care of them. They're curious. They think it's important to learn new things all the time. They learn enjoying. They're a sponge for knowledge. A survivalist has good humor because they're sure of themselves. See, this is what happens. When you start to prepare in your life, you become a lot more sure of yourself. You become a lot more confident. And survivalists also treat other people the way they want to be treated. That's how we should behave. And Furfall closes by saying, being a survivalist is 90% mental attitude. Well, I love what Chuck Swindoll says, and I've mentioned this in other podcasts, the pastor of the church I go to is the Reverend Chuck Swindoll. He said, life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you react to it. Isn't that so true? And even if the stink hits the fan, even if that doesn't occur in our life, right? Even if nothing goes wrong, the attitude we possess makes our life more rich and more fulfilling even today. And there are things in life we can't control. And there's people we can't control. The survival way of thinking makes sure that we do control those things we can and accept those things we can't. And it reminds me of the Serenity Prayer. Grant us the ability to control the things we can, accept those things that we cannot control, and I'm going to add to that, as the prayer goes, the wisdom to know the difference. And even if you're not a spiritual person, I think you can gain something from that. Control the things that you can, accept the things you can't control, and gain the wisdom to know the difference. So if you have the mentality, either by having a fully independent homestead, or even just a few funds saved up in the bank, or a few supplies, a little bit of food put together, or a couple weapons and a bug-out bag or two, set your chin a little bit higher, walk straighter, and it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a doctor, an accountant, a trucker, a plumber, it doesn't matter. Be proud of who you are, because if you are a survivalist, you are a dying breed. And I thought that was just a fantastic way for Furfall to end that incredible article that he wrote. Now, I would hope that survivalists are not a dying breed. I hope that there's more and more of us starting to prop up here, especially lately with what's been going on in the world. But I am afraid that he's right about that. But yet, I'm going to continue my quest to keep spreading the word of survivalism and see if we can change survivalists from being a dying breed to being a growing breed. And so with that said, thank you, Furfall, for that incredible, excellent survival article and that beautiful, positive way to end it, because I think those words ring true more now than they ever have. All right, let's move on to the next subject. And I want to talk about some emergency uses for modern technology, primarily a cell phone. All right, there's some more modern technology I'll talk about in some other podcasts, but let's talk about emergency uses, 50 emergency uses for a camera cell phone. This is written by a person named Paul Purcell. Now, Paul Purcell is a security analyst and a preparedness consultant, and he wrote a book called Disaster Prep 101. And there's a website that I'll link to, but that's where I'm getting this information from. And I first learned about this on Lisa Bedford's blog, thesurvivalmom.com. So excellent information here that I want to share with you about how to use modern technology, specifically in this episode, a cell phone. And they've, as you know, they've come so far in what they're able to do, and a lot of people discount this. A lot of people say, you know, those aren't going to work in a disaster. Let me share something with you. During Katrina, A lot of families felt frustration with the inability to get in touch with loved ones because of the overused cellular networks. And cell phone service did go down for a while during Katrina, but it came back up very quickly. Also, internet came back very quickly. It didn't take too long for them to restore it. Verizon and Sprint recently have said that they've invested about $140 million in some of the Gulf states in the United States after Katrina. AT&T also has spent hundreds of million dollars recently in the Gulf region and throughout the country on wired and wireless infrastructure to help keep cell phone service running in a disaster. And you have to understand something. The primary reason for the lack of cell phone ability during Katrina was because of the lack of power to the cell phone stations and the towers. That was the main reason they didn't have the power. These companies have spent millions of dollars upgrading and buying generators to keep the power going during storms. So let's not discount the use of cell phones even after the disaster happens. And I'm going to cover these. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly, but there are 50 emergency uses for just a simple camera phone. We'll get into computers and radio equipment and communications equipment and some other shows that I want to do. But I know it seems kind of silly to worry about the usage of cell phones, but you know what? If you have a family member in a disaster area, cell phones are going to be very critical. For you to know if they're alive and safe, and for them to know what's going on in their area as well. After the emergency's over, also, you're going to have to return to the area, you're going to have to rebuild, you're going to have to repair your home, repair your community, and central to this communication is documentation. And our society loves red tape after there's a disaster. So let's talk about these 50 ways that a phone camera can help you. First of all, number one, last-minute child ID. Whenever the family might be separated, take last-minute pictures of your family members. All right. This is why I always urge you to keep very recent pictures of your family members and your pets, especially your kids, on your phone stored at all times so you can email or text those pictures. And let me say something about texting. Texting uses a different part of the cellular network than an actual phone call does. So it's quite possible that even though if you're not able to make phone calls after a disaster, you can at least still text. That's been proven in many other disaster areas before that texting still works. How many of you have been using your cell phone, you're carrying on a conversation, and the phone conversation cuts off, but you're still able to send that person a text message? That proves the point, and that's happened to me several times. Number two, sending a map. To send or receive directions to or from a location when voice directions aren't working. You could draw a map on a piece of paper, take a picture, email it, or send it. Number three, you can use a cell phone, camera phone, to send injury photos to a doctor. Let's suppose help's not available and someone's sick or injured. And if there's visible signs or symptoms, you can take pictures, you can relay those pictures to medical personnel who might be able to walk you through some treatment over the phone, for example. Number four, you can use camera phones for damage documentation. In catastrophes, it can be days. Days, maybe even weeks, before insurance adjusters get there to file claims. You can photo all the damage in case some of it gets repaired or cleaned up before the adjusters arrive. Number five, I like this one here. You can use a camera phone to report suspicious activity. If you see suspicious activity in your neighborhood, upload the pictures of the activity or the suspects and the situation to the police immediately. Number six is a great use called Here's the Landmark. If you're gathering your family after an emergency, and if you don't have a fixed meeting place, you can send pictures of where and what you're near, what you're close to, and landmarks so your family members can be looking for those landmarks as they're trying to find you. You can also use a cell phone for number seven, meet us here, if you have a fixed rendezvous point. You can send a picture that you already have on file, so that the others know where to meet you. Number eight's great. A photo shopping. You can photo your shopping list. Excuse me. When you're stocking up in anticipation of a disaster or an emergency, take a picture of your pantry. That can serve as a shopping list. Number 9, driving directions. If you're trying to tell others where a certain location is, send a picture by picture set of directions to them. You can create this file ahead of time while you're assembling your family reaction plans, and you can send them picture by picture directions. Number 10, meet this person. If your family has to evacuate, but they know where to go, but haven't met the family contact person, you should have a family contact person, by the way, folks. You can send them a picture of who that person is that they're supposed to meet. All right, number 11, another good use of a camera phone. Last minute property inventory. If you're evacuating, snap some quick shots of your property. Include some of the most recent purchases that might not be on your home inventory list that hopefully you've backed up ahead of time, and it'll also show the current condition of your property. Number 12, an adventure journal. Take pictures to record what you do, where you go, and the people you meet during an evacuation. All that could prove useful. Number 13, situational severity. I like this one. In a large-scale disaster, first responders are going to be overworked, right? That's no secret. We've seen that. And they might not be able to arrive for a long time. And if they consider it a minor situation, they may never come at all. However, the situation might be a lot worse than they know, and you might be in need of serious help. You can email or send pictures to first responders showing them how bad your situation is. Number 14, quick text messaging. You might not have the time to type a message, and the lines might not be open long enough for a conversation, as I mentioned earlier, but you could do something like write a note on a piece of paper, take a picture of that note, and email that. Number 15, minor traffic mishap. Let's say you have a minor fender bender. All right, let's say there's no injuries, no disabled vehicles. Most of the time, you're going to be told to exchange information with them and move along. If that's the case, you can take a picture of the vehicle's damage, the people involved. If there were witnesses, maybe get some car tag numbers of people that were involved or people that saw things, and you can show that later when you need to. All that could be also valuable information for an insurance company to know as well. Number 16, wallet backup. Take a picture of your wallet's contents. Now, be kind of careful with this. All right, be careful about important documents. You make this choice or not. But it's also been theorized you can use a camera phone to record numbers and show cards that were in your possession, for example, when you lost your wallet. Identity theft is something I worry about here. So you make a personal choice on that one, but that could be a use. Number 17 is also pretty cool. How about reporting inclement weather? Yeah, let's say you're the first one to see a funnel cloud or hail or a river that's flooding. Send a picture to the weather service or the authorities that are in charge as proof of an emergency that's developing. Okay, I like number 18, first responder intelligence. The more first responders know about a collapsed house, for example, or an auto accident, or a fire, the more they know about the emergency, sometimes the more rapid and the more appropriate action they can make. So you can take some pictures and you can email that to them. This next one I covered in a previous show, but I'm going to cover it again. Missing people. Send pictures of missing people. In addition to last-minute family photos, you can also send a picture of a photograph that you have in your purse or your wallet. If, let's say, you don't have it stored on your phone, but you've got the most recent school picture of your kid in your wallet, you could take a picture of that picture and email that. Number 20, you can relay property damage to or from neighbors. After a disaster, let's not forget about after a disaster. Whoever goes home first, either you or your neighbors, you can photograph area damage and relay that info to one another. It's helpful to know what you're walking into when you go home after a disaster. Number 21, help insurance adjusters find your property. After a devastating incident, street signs could be gone. You might not be able to see their house number. You can take pictures of current landmarks or unique damage near your property to make it easier for people to find you. All right, 22, copy bulletin boards. If you're in an emergency shelter and there's an information bulletin board, you might need the info but might not be able to write it down. Take a picture of it. How about things like bus and subway maps if you're in the city? Okay, If you're anywhere you're not familiar with when a disaster occurs and there's a posted map, take a picture of that map for a reference later if you get lost. You can also use a cell phone to document your route when you're traveling to a new area. You know, and you want to find your way back from that area. Take pictures along the way of landmarks at turns and forks on the road. Number 25, something I really never even thought much about until I read this article, record medicines or food brands. To relay information about medications or if you have special dietary needs, and you're sending information regarding certain brands to someone, a picture, like they say, a picture of that, medicines or special foods worth a thousand words. Parking spot locations. I need to start using this more. Don't trust your memory. Trust a picture. Take a picture of where you left your vehicle in a parking lot or a huge parking structure. Man, I need to start doing that. I'm one of the world's worst. And in a disaster, when your memory is shot, that's even going to be harder to remember. 27, engine repairs. Should you break down or your vehicle shows signs of problems, you know, like steam shooting out from a hose or liquids dripping from the engine, maybe take a picture of it, send a picture to a mechanic who might be able to walk you through a quick fix so you can get to the station. You can also use a cell phone, a camera phone, to copy posted business hours for later review. Okay? And also, how about things like price gouging? If there's an accident, if there's a disaster, you're going to have a lot of people price gouging. Maybe you can report or take pictures of things like this, send that to the authorities. Just a thought. Number 29 is a cool one if you have kids. You can use a camera cell phone for child custodian purposes. If you can't get your kids at school, okay, let's say you can't pick them up. You can relay a picture of the person that you designate to pick your kids up. You can send this picture, you can email it from your phone to the school or the place where your child is. And then that way, if they've got a phone camera, then they can see a picture of who's supposed to be there to pick up your kid. That could be extremely useful, especially if you can't get there. Number 30, you can use a camera phone for information on injured or hospitalized people. You might be in a position to send pictures to people looking for their loved ones, or vice versa. Number 31, I got to use too, because I do a lot of traveling. I got to use this a lot. Hotel room number. Right? Whenever you get to a hotel room, use your camera phone to take a picture of it to help you find your way back, especially if you leave your hotel room and a disaster occurs. Right? Again, remember, our memories will be gone. Okay? If you have a photo of the room number and the door and the name of the motel and the adjacent buildings to the motel, might be a lot easier for you to find your way back after a disaster. Excuse me. How about number 32? Use a camera phone to ID your evacuation gear. Just like all your belongings, take a picture to prove the ownership of it. All right, this might come in real handy with theft in emergency shelters. It's very rare occurrence, but it could be something that you can have ready to prove that things are yours. Number 33, another good use for a camera phone, a photo scavenger hunt. In a disaster, if you have kids, entertaining the kids is going to be very challenging. All right, and you're going to need something. One thing you can do, give them a short list of things that they should take a picture of and say, hey, kids, first one to take a picture of all this list wins. All right, entertainment for kids. Don't forget that a cell phone, camera phone, even if there's no cell phone service, you can still use these things to take pictures, and that can entertain kids a lot, especially if you have a video function on your cell phone. Number 34, another idea is to take a real close-up picture of something while the kids aren't looking and have them try to figure out what it is. Something else to keep their mind entertained. Number 35, document your whereabouts. Let's say there's looting or rioting after a disaster. Happens all the time, right? Take pictures as you're leaving the scene to document the fact that you were not involved in it. Whatever kind of paper trail or picture trail that you have, that can only help you, folks. Number 36, ID the rescuer. Okay? If there's a rescuer picking up your child or your pet, photograph the rescuer and the vehicle that they're using. Okay, photograph their name tag as well as registration numbers on vehicles and so forth and what they're doing. That can help you in many, many ways if you can photograph that rescuer. And if somebody else has your child in a disaster, again, like I mentioned before, you can email that photograph and say, this is the person who's going to be rescuing or coming to get my child. Number 37, document your cleanup after a disaster. No doubt, a lot of cleanup's going to be taking place. And it might take a while before your insurance adjuster can arrive. Okay, take pictures of the damage as it was when you found it and the steps that you took during cleanup. Show this to the insurance. Regarding insurance, folks, nothing beats good documentation. Number 38, document your expenditures. If you buy goods or supplies, or you rent equipment, or you hire a service, in addition to the receipts, photographs the goods that you bought, the equipment that you're using, the services performed, and the people that are involved. All this can be useful in a disaster. Number 39, how about taking pictures of your property for retrieval companies? Okay, in a lot of disasters, you might not be able to return home, but there are companies who are trained and equipped to go into the areas, gather other people's stuff and belongings. And if you have photos of your property, it'll help you to identify specific items that you want them to retrieve. All right, number 40, evacuee status. Using a picture phone, you can let the authorities are going to want to know who's injured, who's dead, who's missing, who's okay, where are they? Okay, taking pictures of those that you meet along the way or at your emergency shelter if you have to go to one. That'll help ID the living and the well and what's going on. Number 41, how about language barriers? Never thought of this one either. Okay. Have you ever tried to find the restroom in a foreign country and you didn't know the phrase? Imagine how guests in our country feel in emergency situations. Pictures make communication a lot easier, whether you're trying to understand their needs or relay yours. This sounds kind of funny, but think about it, all right? If you can show a picture of, hey, where do I find the restroom? If you can show them a picture of a restroom, hey, in a disaster, if you're in an area where there's language barriers, those things can come in handy. Don't forget about that. I know it might sound kind of silly, but think about it. How about number 42? You can use a camera phone to transmit road conditions. How about after a hurricane? And you're one of the first families returning back home. Okay? You're taking back roads. What if you see damage on the back roads? You might want to report it to authorities. Or there's no damage. You can report that too. Sending a picture can relay tons of information on road conditions. You can also send that to other family members as well that are also trying to find their way back home. Also, 43, you can do the same thing with traffic. You can relay traffic conditions. Okay? If you and your family members are separated or you're heading in different directions, you can pass along what's going on with traffic or information from different traffic warnings. Number 44. This is a good one for a camera phone. Crime scene evidence. People after disasters have returned home. They've come back to a home undamaged by a disaster, but the place was looted, and police might not be able to show up right away. You can take crime scene photos so that you can show it to the cops. If somebody's come in and they've looted your house, this is good for the cops or the insurance company or both. Okay, number 45, what if you see too much information on TV screen, for example? All right, let's say after a disaster, once television service has been restored, they might start flashing a lot of pertinent information that you need to remember and you don't have time to write it down, all right? Or there's a lot of text on the computer on an internet site that you've checked and you can't print it or you don't have time to write that down either. Take a picture of the screen so you can review it later. Okay, number 46, how about using a camera phone as an ID mechanism for doctors or pharmacies? Medical needs are going to be a huge probability during an emergency. You might not be able to get to your doctor, and they might phone in a prescription to a pharmacy that doesn't know of you and don't have the details. You can use your phone to verify your identity to your doctor, and your doctor can relay the picture of you to the pharmacy. How about number 47, emergency supply info? Suppose a developing emergency finds you low on goods and you send different people to different supply locations to pick things up for you. If supplies are low, these folks can send a picture of the types or the brands of items available so you can make educated purchasing decisions. Number 48, I like this one too. You can use a camera phone as a last minute list. Right? Now, I know all of you listening to this show, you keep a bug-out kit, right? You keep a good bug-out kit packed and ready. All right? But there's going to be items that you can't pack in advance. And in addition to a written list, you might want to make a photo file showing you the items you need to grab real quickly and where they are in your house and what steps that you need to take to secure those items before taking off and leaving your house. Doesn't hurt to have that in pictures as well. Number 49, how about an evacuation atlas? You can use a camera phone to create a travel atlas of emergency assets available along evacuation routes. Things like hotels, ATM locations, emergency rooms, travel the routes and take photos ahead of time or draw maps and shoot those maps, shoot pictures of those. And finally, number 50, how about a reaction plan for people who are what we call reading disabled? If a family member suffers from a reading disability, for example, you can use photos. You can create a photo file that will relay your entire emergency plan without having to use any text. And now that I've covered those, I also want to mention, too, something about don't forget to back up your phones. All right? Cell phones themselves are often used without any kind of a safety net. Don't neglect this whole part of using a phone or a computer as well. Back it up, and back it up regularly. It's estimated that only about 2% of all cell phone users regularly back that phone up. Now, I back up my phone at least about 6 times a week, and the reason is I use an iPhone. And whenever I synchronize my iPhone with iTunes, for example, it creates an automatic backup. BlackBerries do that very well, too. There's also a lot of third-party vendors that offer products designed specifically to back up cell phones. I'll find a few of those, and I'll put a link in the show notes is where you can use third-party software to do that as well. A couple of them, one's called Backup Pal, and another one's called Future Dial. And they make pretty easy-to-use cell phone backup and recovery systems, and the prices are pretty good as well. So even if you want to use a third-party source, you can. If you don't have a BlackBerry or an iPhone that are really easy to back up, let's say you're using a Motorola flip phone or something, you might want to use one of these other services. Okay, so with that, I hope I got you thinking here a little bit about these wonderful things called cell phones and how we can use them. I covered a little bit of this in a previous episode a couple of months ago. But when I found this article, I wanted to expand on it and give you some more things to think about. Let's not discount technology. Now, since we're on that subject, I want to close with this. There's a forum member, M. Barnettle, on our forum, and he's pretty big into computers, and he also talks about ways to use our computers as a survival tool. And I want to share a post from M. Barnettle on our forum. You know, he says we use our computers to surf the internet and gain knowledge. Well, that's a survival tool, isn't it? We use our computers to network with others, like when you get onto today's Survival Show forum, or you download a podcast. We use our computers to buy things and to entertain ourselves. Computers are also a great prepping tool as well. We can create food storage databases. I thought that was a great a suggestion that he came up with, and also inventory your house. Buy survival supplies or chat with like-minded people. And M. Barnettle turned me onto a program called My Ice Plan, My ICE, in case of an emergency. I mentioned this in a previous show, but it's a software program that I'm using. I'm on the 30-day trial right now. It's a fantastic program for inventorying your house and your survival preps. And he also says when we use our computers on the internet, we also have other risks to plan for. For example, identity theft. So be careful. You can be stalked, you can be ripped off, or you can just lose personal data that's stored on your computer. So one of the first things you should do is to protect yourself and your operating system from identity theft, spyware. Don't forget about that. It's amazing. I'm shocked, personally, by the number of people running a computer, and especially those of you who are using it for survival preparations, not keeping it protected. Always have it backed up in at least more than one location as well. But there's a lot of software programs that you can use to protect yourself against identity theft. One of the things is making sure that the virus protection and the anti-spyware software installed on your computer is up to date. All right, so check out third-party software programs that help protect your computer. Now, this is a personal decision. You might say, well, you know, I don't want to store all that private info directly on my PC. Okay, fine, but don't discount that, because if you protect it well, and you can pick and choose which data you want to store on there, but it's a great survival tool when you think about using a computer for tracking things like food storage, inventory, survival supplies, things like that that we just talked about. And also don't forget about a laptop computer, for example, being a fantastic entertainment tool for kids in an emergency. So, M. Barnattle, thank you for your post on the forum, and if I'll put a link to that post if you want to go check that out further. I would certainly invite you to do that. So, now that I've covered most of what I wanted to discuss on particularly cell phones, quick review. As I bring this show to a close, I want to remind you to become a member of the SAC Club. Let's get involved. Let's start doing our part in government of the people, by the people, and for the people to exert our influence that we should have as the body of people in this country or whatever country that you're listening from. Get involved. Get involved. Win this contest. Send me the response that you get from your elected officials. And don't forget about making sure that you have the proper philosophy that'll change your life and the proper survival philosophy. That short list of productivity, having good friends, spirituality, making a plan, not missing things, living well, taking care of your inner circle, and taking advantage of the chance every day to participate in the miracle process. Excellent survival philosophy. Thank you, Furfall, for that wonderful post on practical survivalism and the positive spin that you put on it at the end of your article. And I hope out of the 50 uses of a cell phone that I just discussed, I'll bet you that there's probably 6 or 7 in there that maybe you didn't think of, or even if there's a few that you didn't think of. Thank you, Paul Purcell, for writing that and for your book, Disaster Prep 101. With that, I'm going to bring this to a close and let you know that this is Bob Main, and you have just listened to another episode of today's survival show, episode 35 to be exact, where we help you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want to live and to strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple and practical, and I hope that's what you found today in listening to this show. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you next time.